Do not adjust your radio dial. You are tuned in to the Mark Order Podcast. Join the Mark Order.
You know what that means. That was more enthusiasm than commentary had for a really, really great episode of AEW Dynamite tonight. It is Wednesday. It is the Mark Order Podcast. It is, I should probably start saying the date on these. It's April 16th. All-timer Dynamite tonight, I feel like. This was a hell of an episode. I'm excited to get to chat about it. We got a full house today. We've got Ryan, we've got Joe, we've got me, who's been on a heater of like more than 3 weeks in a row. So that's always exciting when I actually get to be here consistently. Please leave a thumbs up on this video. Please subscribe if you have not already. It's very, very, very much appreciated. Hang out with us in the chat. Taylor Cannon, the best, is here. Fernando is in the chat. We got some love coming in from you guys. This episode was fan-freaking-tastic. I'm pumped to talk about it. I'm pumped that Joe is back. I compliment his shirt, even as a vegan. Chicken tenders. Now, is that like, where did you find such an incredible shirt?
You know, I found it at a store that sells things supposedly for under $5.
Okay. You seem skeptical. Was it more than $5?
It was. It was $5.55.
Now, see, that's some bullshit, but I do appreciate the like, oh my God, 555 make a wish, because I am a white girl. So it is in my, it is in my DNA.
I thought that was 11-11.
It's like all of them. 11-11 is like the best one, but they're all, anything like that is an angel number. So there you go. Fernando is saying that Ospreay and Takeshita is the greatest Dynamite match in history. Man, we're going to get into it. We're going to get into it. But before that, we're going to check in with Ryan, who I got to chop it up with last week coming off of Dynasty. We were still very tired even on Wednesday because that pay-per-view was too long, but it was a lot of fun coming out of it in good style here. But Ryan, how you doing in general? How are things over there?
I'm lovely. You said full house, and I've just been singing the full house theme in my head the whole time.
Whatever happened to predictability, man?
The milkman, the paperboy, the evening TV.
Oh, everywhere you look. There was a really good match on Dynamite tonight. This is probably going to be such a short review because there were a couple really long matches on here and not a lot of backstages to talk about. But we do have new Trios champs, which I'm excited to talk about. One of the best AEW Dynamite matches in history, people are saying in the chat. I agree with them, with Takeshita and Ospreay. And Athena and Mercedes, I feel like lived up to the hype. I thought that was an excellent match. I, of course, was getting chicken tenders during part of it. But from what I was able to see, really, really incredible. Really, really incredible. But what did you guys think overall?
Yeah, it felt like a grand slam type of level of a Dynamite tonight with just how stacked the wrestling was and not doing as much, like you said, not doing as much backstage. And we had a lot of matches where it's a lot of, you know, first time in the ring together in a one-on-one match. And I thought that kind of added to the, you know, the elevation of this episode.
This wasn't Dark Elevation, Joe. Why would you say that? But we were elevated. We were elevated with Will Ospreay. But yeah, to your point about that, like there was so, it was so minimal on like the angles side and the backstage. It did feel more like a grand slam, more like a pay-per-view almost. They clearly wanted to make this a statement episode, which kind of leads us into the news and notes. This was the celebration of AEW becoming the longest primetime wrestling program in Turner broadcasting history. You have to be very careful about how you say that, because otherwise dorks on the internet are like, but Saturday night's main event. I'm like, that's not prime time. Saturday night is not prime time, people. If you grew up in the 90s, you know what prime time is. It was that Thursday night lineup, okay, with like Friends and stuff. And then it was the Friday night lineup with, as Ryan was singing earlier, your Full Houses, your TGIF, the whole gamut. You had Family Matters. California Dreams was a morning one. What else was in
that? That was a Saturday morning show. That was, yeah, a Saturday morning. Herbie Dreams was an original Boy Meets World. And
World, that's right. That's prime time, baby. I don't care what anyone says.
Now we had a spinoff of Perfect Strangers.
What was?
Family Matters was a spinoff of Perfect Strangers.
Oh yes, that I remember. I loved Perfect Strangers. I was a big fan. That opening theme was a bop. Do you remember how dramatic it was?
I do.
Standing tall on the wings. It was a lot. It was intense, but oh my god, Step by Step. How could I forget?
I said Step by Step.
You did say Step by Step. There were a lot of things happening. There's a lot of things going on in my very ADD mind right now. But almost ADD, as good as the way that would hit is this episode of AEW Dynamite. Clearly a statement episode. This is WWE's week, kind of. This is WrestleMania week, and we'll just get right into it, I guess. We'll talk about our kind of news and notes of the night. First, we'll talk about the fact that Josh Alexander is All Elite. He was your wild card, as I think a lot of people had kind of assumed. Some people were saying maybe it's Jack Perry with the Elite being back. Some other people were taking other guesses, but I think this was pretty well carved out for him. We're going to talk about all of that in a second. And also WWE just taking shot after shot at AEW in the press. And what to me is a baffling thing to do. I did media relations for a very, very long time, and media coaching was a big part of that. And I don't know if I've seen figureheads so uncoachable as Triple H's. I think Nick Khan was doing this on purpose. I think it's very strategic, but I don't understand, when you are the leader in the industry by a sizable enough gap, why you would take shots at number two this heavily on your biggest weekend of the year, why you're not out there kind of making the sound bites be about your event. Cause I feel like everybody was talking about AEW all day. But Nick Khan saying a few things, one, that WWE is an underdog. I think he meant in the greater media landscape, but even that I find ridiculous. I think they're only behind the NFL and maybe esports, because esports took a really, really sharp turn up in that greater landscape. So that was nonsense. And also calling Tony Khan a billionaire's son over and over again, and saying that really Shad Khan was the backing in all of this. Tons of shots today, which the billionaire thing always cracks me up, because for me, and I'll kick this over to both of you guys, for starters, I don't give a shit. Like, I have more of a problem of WWE taking Saudi Arabia money than I do of anybody starting a company with money from a billionaire. So many companies are started with money from a billionaire. And I certainly don't think you should be saying things like that when this company was started on the founder's father's money. And on top of that, Triple H is in the position that he's in because he married into the family of a billionaire. Like, it's way too close of a home to take a shot like that. I found that really corny. I would also point out that this year AEW is run off of AEW's money. It's no longer backed by that. It is now in its profitable era, I guess. So that rights renewal deal, some of those startup costs, like building your foundation for video games and things like that, are not sunken costs anymore. The contracts play in the same pay caliber, otherwise they wouldn't be landing stars. So I just found that really fucking corny. Like, there's a million things I could say about it on the press side. Maybe I'll do a separate stream on my own channel about it. But like, I'm constantly baffled by WWE's inability to deliver an easy press run Because it's not even just these gaffes, right? Like there was a podcast the other day that Triple H is, he's glazing up Donald Trump talking about how he can get great heat. He's a world leader. He's not a fucking heel. He's a world leader. But the beginning of that podcast was him talking about the curtain call story for a half hour. A half hour. The curtain call story. Holy shit, this guy's bad at this. But as far as it pertains to this podcast, I just wanted to open the window for you guys to talk about whatever you wanted. But I felt like it was an incredibly corny move to take the Wednesday that Dynamite is on, we get it, and take shots at AEW. That was very lowbrow to me. But Joe, we'll start with you. Do you give a shit about any of this? Or are you just like, it's wrestling, it's billionaires fighting other billionaires, who gives a shit?
Probably a little bit of both. I find it interesting from, just like you talked about, the public relations aspect of it, because, you know, having worked in media long enough to understand communications, it's an odd choice to, like you said, on this press run, when you kind of control your messaging, then you choose to go this direction and not the conversation of propping up WrestleMania 41. Maybe that gives credence to people who complained about how it's not being built strong enough. So they're kind of deflecting and talking about other things. But it's just kind of a tired conversation of, you know, throwing rocks and calling the kettle black or whatever. So it's just an interesting choice. I don't think, like you said, I don't think it's a strategic choice. I think it's a choice.
Yeah, this was a very, very odd one. And Ryan, I'll throw it to you, and then we'll circle back, Joe, because the other piece of this was them saying that they don't bench talent. Like, if you sign here, we don't bench talent. And I laughed out loud. Like, my dog was snoozing and then perked up because I laughed out loud at how ridiculous of a statement that is and how entirely hypocritical it is. When Natalia Hart, who you just signed, is wrestling a blood sport match, Omos, like, actually came back with some momentum from Japan. But, like, beyond that, the women's tag gauntlet on SmackDown consisted of three teams who had never tagged together before. You have so much women's talent there. Roxanne Perez is not benched. But you had her in the Royal Rumble. You had her set a record for the longest time in there in the Royal Rumble. She was the runner-up, and then she was in Elimination Chamber. And then you just kicked her back down to the pre-show of NXT. So, like, I know that's more talent usage than benching, but the chat's bringing up what I was going to say next. Alexa Bliss had the hottest return of all of Royal Rumble. Her pop was nuts. And because one person in the Wyatt Six is injured, they just can't be on TV? What is going on? Like, that to me was egregious. Now, maybe they meant, like, in the way that Ricky Starks was benched, like, iced. But they bench plenty of talent. They bench plenty of talent. That was just such a dumb shot to take. Because the two that they took about being a billionaire... Like, there's so many things to criticize AEW for, but, like, being a billionaire is not one of them. I'm sorry. Like, you also came from billionaire stock and sold to a billion-dollar company. And then the benching talent thing was so wrong. Like, just so, so off base. But, Ryan, what did you think of all of this? And then we'll circle back to Joe for his thoughts on that specifically.
So, I'm with you, too. I actually find this stuff interesting from an outsider's point of view. Not in the way some people do where they get weird with it. Just more like whenever either company has a stumble that they could have easily avoided, I'm like, you didn't run this by anyone. And this is a big one because it's your most important week of the year if you're WWE. And you've somehow turned the entire conversation to be about your rival company that... And I know they thought they were going to win it with the shots they took, but they... ended up just looking far, far dumber. Like, everyone being like, well, this isn't true, and this isn't true, and this isn't true. Again, the billionaire versus thing, it's like, Vince McMahon didn't even start his company. His dad did. And it's sad, his dad sold it to him at a discount. So, like, and I don't have any problem with that. but don't pretend like that you guys are the company of the, you know, pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. No, the dad started the company and it was successful before Vince had it, and Vince bought a successful company. And now Triple H, you're a billionaire son-in-law. Like, what are we talking about here? But I think you were pointing out almost is the example, but the one about benching people, being like, you don't call out your opponent doing something if you're doing the same thing. Because all that does is give people
PR 101. Like, yeah, I learned that in PR 101.
I mean, I didn't take PR 101, and even I am like, it is that simple concept of like, just don't say it. But it always, what I don't understand is the why of it. That's where my brain just locks down, of being like, you don't need to shit on them. You don't. You are the number one company. Like, bar none, you're the biggest wrestling company in the world. You're the biggest wrestling company that's ever existed in the world. I don't think AEW, I love, obviously, a huge fan of AEW. I don't think they're ever going to, quote unquote, overtake them, because I just think sheer economics, that, you know, something would have to really change in WWE, I think, for that to happen. Why are you taking these shots on your biggest week? It just doesn't make sense to me.
I think they thought, because they weren't talking to wrestling publications when they said these things, that would be fine. But then those people aren't going to give a shit about AEW anyway. You know what I mean? And if you don't say, they always say the other promotion. It's like, well, if you're talking to a casual fan base and you're not saying the other three letters, they don't know what the fuck you're talking about. And they're not going to have context for what the fuck you talk about. So say that they are getting interested in wrestling. If you keep calling it the other place and then AEW comes in with a local ad and names itself. I mean, this shit is like, is so fucking basic in this.
Also, I'm going to say not naming the place is actually worse, because
100% it is.
Curiosity is the one thing you don't want to create.
Yeah.
So like, if you come out and go like, AEW is just a bunch of shitheads, you're like, all right. And the person listening be like, oh, that company must suck. You go, oh, that other place. They're going to be like, who is that other place?
Yeah.
And they're going to Google.
And the funniest thing to me about this was like, what kind of took over the news really late last night was Naito. So like, if you're looking around right now, like there's the Mariah May stuff, but like if you were doing just a general search of things, like on Fightful social media, like everything was about Naito and Bushi leaving and like what's going on in New Japan. So like, that's not even going to be the right point of reference for things that were like in the news a little bit. It's a very odd thing. It's a very, very odd thing. And it also makes you seem like kind of a pussy. Like, you're not naming the other person to take, you're taking shots, but not naming who you're taking a shot at, is that little bitch behavior. I'm sorry. It is. Maybe I will do a video on this because I'm hot about it. But like, what I would love to see AEW do, there's something that we learned that you learn in PR, whether you learn it in a classroom or experience, that if somebody takes a shot at you, they're usually, most times, especially if it's number one punching down at number two, there's usually a gift in there. There's usually something of like, if somebody calls you so minor leagues, you can say, okay, what do we do with that? Oh, minor league games are affordable to go to and often more focused on the sport, and the energy is better and more fun. Like, there's so many things that you can do to reframe things when somebody takes a shot at you, when someone's punching down, that it's, I would love to see AEW start to not fight back and say like, we are minor leagues and it's great, but say, take all of the advantages of your product for the ticket buying experience, because people paying $1,300 to sit in row 8 of a random SmackDown before WrestleMania to watch a 7-minute fucking DQ, whatever, roll up ass finish is ridiculous. And that crest is starting to turn. WWE hasn't sold out WrestleMania yet. And like, I know Triple H went really hard on, don't listen online, just be a fan. And it's because everyone's shitting on his product online right now. So it's inconvenient for him if people listen to what is being said online. There's always something with that with Triple H. There's always something like, oh, we're under a sex trafficking investigation. don't listen to wrestling media about things then. We don't want you to believe them. We don't want you to think they're credible. Like, it's always something fucking stupid. It's something.
So I want to hear Joe say more because I feel bad it's been quiet, but I have to ask. They haven't sold out Mania?
No. They're close. They might do it. They'll probably announce it. But the cheap seats are $400. Like the really, really high seats are like $400.
Well, that's I mean, I'm just shocked because last year they sold it out so quickly.
Tickets were not this bad. They were high last year, but they were not this bad.
Well,
this
it's is... Vegas. Vegas just makes it worse.
Yeah, that doesn't help.
And then I'll kick to Joe in a second. But my next thing is everyone watching can absolutely hear how I pitch things to Kate. You 1000% need to do a video on PR 101 for wrestling. Because
I will, I want to, because I'm like, this has me like rocking and rolling. But just,
but then I have a question for Joe, because I do have. So, Joe, what did you make of Nick Khan's comments? Trying to say I'm professional. What did you make of? Nick Khan said, like, all those people, you know, they have a big roster and we love it because they're just all going to sign here after they're done. What?
The people who are maybe are disgruntled or upset with how they're being handled in one promotion probably have their minds made up already. So I don't think that him saying that, oh, promising they're going to book them better is going to sell them, considering that, sure. Like you pointed out, the hypocrisy of they're playing as examples and people getting benched. You know, I know Ricochet was having fun that I think comments and tweets about it. We talked about all the guys who just, you know, would be stuck in catering and did nothing. You're either being ignorant by saying that or you're not watching your product, which I find me hard to believe. So that's kind of where I'm at with the whole benching talent thing.
Yeah, I just feel like it's such an, as a completely, like, again, I don't care where a wrestler sign. I care where individual wrestlers sign in my taste of, like, oh, where I think I'll have the most fun watching a rivalry. But in terms of overall, I don't care where a wrestler signs. Like, I watch both, so I'll see. Like, I'm happy Ricky Saints signed with WWE because now he's being used. I would have loved him in AEW to be used, but if you're not going to use him, put him where I can watch him wrestle every week because he's fantastic. Yeah. That being said, it rubs me the wrong way because I think it's nothing to do with one company. It's just my natural feeling against arrogance. And I don't like when someone sounds super arrogant and just sounds so arrogant to be like, oh, they're all going to want to come here. Like, no, you'll get some and then you'll lose some. That's how this works.
That's how the game is played. I do think some of it was because of Miss Mariah May, which was funny. I was watching the show that Sean does, with Jimmy Van on Fightful the Hump. And it's, if you don't watch it, it's entirely a business industry oriented thing. And he was like, no, we didn't really report a ton on it other than just to say she has several months left on it, because it was obviously a contract negotiation ploy for her to put that out there. Like,
1000%.
It's how the industry works. It's just that people have been under the umbrella of a wrestling monopoly for so long that they don't really know. But Joe, anything else you want to close the loop on with all this ridiculous media chit-chat today?
No, just further speaks to, I feel like, heightening the tribalism among fans. Because I feel like when you say those kind of like outrageous out-of-pocket things, you're speaking to your base. Kind of, no, and we've seen that playbook used over and over again in politics and everything else. It just feels like you're not helping the whole professional wrestling culture as much as you're just continuing to cause this division. And it's just silly because we're just talking about scripted professional wrestling.
It's extremely silly. I've been using that word a lot because people take things too seriously. So when I say things are bad now, I'm just like, I don't want to use harsh wording, but it is.
Yeah. I mean, all this whole conversation needs to be tinged with the, we're talking about professional wrestling, and none of us actually.
They lost sight of that. You know what I mean? Like, you're the You're a multi-billion-dollar company on the biggest week of your life, and you're like, I'm gonna punch down at AEW. But it's a weird thing.
I will say, and I just, and then we can, the timing for Nikon to come out and be like, and all those guys over there, they're gonna want to sign here the same night or the day Josh Alexander goes to AEW when he could have gone to WWE. It's like, that is just, I'm like, did you do him a favor there? Like, I can't. And for anyone, because Maria in the chat, hi Maria, said it right. Like, tribalism sucks. And I hate that that's what this conversation brings about, is tribalism. Because if Tony Khan, when Tony Khan has said some stupid stuff, and when he comes out and says his stupid stuff, I'm just as like, what are you doing, guy? Like,
it depends on what he said. I'm a little less that way because they're the number two one in the market. There's something strategically smart about taking shots at number one, because if it gets picked up, wrestling fans are going to see your shit. He's gone too far with it and gone overkill on it before. But what's so funny, running the Fightful socials or having access to them now was so funny, because you see just how stupid people are. And I don't mean like, oh, they're so stupid. I mean literally unintelligent. People are clipping. Do you remember when the TNA AEW partnership happened, or the Impact at that time, what happened? And Tony Khan was doing those throwback in-character commercials with Tony Schiavone. Like, there was usually some 80s looking ass backdrop. People are clipping them like they were real. Like they were shoot, like he was shoot. He's talking to Tony Schiavone. This is not an interview he was doing with the media. Like, people are genuinely that fucking stupid. So anyway, we'll move on to talking about one of the best AEW Dynamites in a long time, arguably ever. I'm really excited to talk about this. I think AEW is in a groove of doing what they do best. And we do have new Trios champions, which is extremely exciting. So the biggest complaint of the Death Rider seems to be on its way out. But before we get into any of that, please do leave a thumbs up. A lot more of you guys are watching now than were at the beginning. We see you, Jesse Ozog. Hi, Jesse Ozog. Tim McFowell's here. Maria's here. Second Lieutenant Colonel Photo, thank you for your service as always. The other week when it was his birthday, his wife actually messaged me on Blue Sky and was like, hey, please be sure to embarrass him, which I don't think we did enough of, but there's...
That is a good wife.
That is. She sounds like a real one. Sounds like a real one. But we are going to kick it to a commercial break. Now that things have kind of settled in this regard, I did just want to shout out Tony of the Shining Wizards lost his dad last week, and I didn't want to mention it on here until he kind of got through all of the wake and the funeral and all that kind of stuff. And he seems like he's doing all right, but Shining Wizards Network is who we broadcast on, and Tony is such a character for sure, but such a wealth of wrestling knowledge, and like one of the like most like fans I think you'll ever be. Like, that guy loves wrestling, and even the things that he hates, it's because he loves wrestling. Like, he's never out to hate for no reason. He's usually got something to back it up. And I've learned so much from him about promotions I didn't know about or wrestlers I was unfamiliar with, and he's a dear friend, and I just want to send him all the love that we can here at the Mark Order podcast. He's a great fella and a hell of a wrestling savant. So wanted to send my love to him. But we are on the Shining Wizards Network, and we will throw to this commercial break. And when we come back, we will talk all about this episode of AEW Dynamite.
I'm going to start playing.
We'd like to thank each and every one of you for tuning in every Monday night to listen to The Shining Wizards. If you'd like to continue to support us outside of listening, we've got a few ways for you to do that. If you shop at Amazon, go over to amazon.shiningwizards.com, do your shopping as usual, and when you make your purchase, a little bit of that purchase price will go back to support the show. If you like to wear t-shirts, merch.shiningwizards.com will take you to our Pro Wrestling Tees store, where we've got over a dozen great designs from over 11 years of professional wrestling podcasting. You can become a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/wizardspodcast, where each and every week we call out your name as one of our show producers, and the more you support us, the more things that you're entitled to receive, and believe me, they are fantastic. If you can't support us monetarily, if you don't shop at Amazon, that's absolutely fine. Continue to listen to us wherever you listen to us on the World Wide Web, and make sure you like, rate, review, subscribe, do all that good stuff. Doesn't cost you anything, helps us out, and we can continue to bring you the love fest that is The Shining Wizards.
What's up, folks? It's your boy, the Impact Player, Mr. Philly Ray, inviting all of you to check out the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. Join us as we cover all things current in the world of pro wrestling, as well as paying homage to the old school, the squared circle. So listen in and find out why we are the recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting. Find us on all social media platforms and anywhere you get your podcast from. And as always, we are the proudest members of the Shining Wizards Network and Rant Entertainment Media.
Are you tired of being lied to every day by the mainstream media?
Do you want to know what's really going on in the world?
Do you want to make up your own mind about things and not be told what to think or say?
Then listen to Inconclusive Breakdown, a weekly anti-PC look at the world of entertainment and current events, brought to you without censorship or filters.
You can find us everywhere you listen to podcasts, BitChute, and on ShiningWizardsNetwork.com.
And also, we're a proud member of the Shining Wizards Network.
Got 30 minutes to kill?
Come check out 30 Screams or Less, where we review a horror movie in 30 minutes or less. We cover new movies and old ones, too.
We'll give our honest thoughts on the movie, good or shit, as well as a rating of each one that we watch.
New episodes weekly, available on the Shining Wizards Network and wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Corey.
Come check us out at 30 Screams or Less.
G'day guys, my name is Thomas, one half of the Broadcast Podcast. With our podcast, we go back and watch wrestling events from WWE, WWF, WCW, ECW, AEW, and many other wrestling promotions. You can check us out on Twitter at The Broadcast, that's THEBROKAST, and you can also download all episodes on Apple Podcast, CastBox, Castro, and many other podcast apps.
You like your music heavy? Then check out Radioactive Metal on the Shining Wizards Network. For over 16 years now, Radioactive Metal has been one of the longest running podcasts. Over the years, we've interviewed some legendary metal acts, had some awesome discussions, and cranked a hell of a lot of tunes. So join your cool Uncle Snowy and his co-host Aaron for the audio mosh pit that is Radioactive Metal here on the Shining Wizards Network.
Well, the action is underway!
What's up, everyone? When on the Shining Wizards Network, be sure to check out Wrestling Night in Canada. If we're not recording another kick-ass podcast,
or playing in punk bands,
or recording kick-ass heavy metal albums,
then we're sitting back, we're grabbing a couple brews, and going over everything to do in the world of pro wrestling.
Because we're from Winnipeg, you idiots.
The Mark Order Podcast is the only show you need if you're looking for dedicated coverage of everything AEW on the Shining Wizards Network. Join us live on YouTube every Wednesday night at 10:15 p.m. Eastern after Dynamite to chat along with the show. If you can't join us live, listen to us on your favorite podcast platform. Follow us on all social channels at Mark Order Pod and use the hashtag #JoinTheMarkOrder, because if you don't find us,
we will find you.
I'm Kevin Rogue.
I'm Al Day.
And we're a couple of down under pounders that co-host Rogue Day Dots, an action figure collecting podcast where we talk about, well, just about anything that tickles our fancy at any given moment.
We're grumpy old men, and sometimes people get on our nerves. And when you get on our nerves, guess what? You get off the lawn.
Get off my lawn, asshole! We also go on a little bit of a mission. We go back and we're grading every wrestling figure line that's out there. I'm talking LJNs. I'm talking Jacks. I'm talking Hasbros. Who doesn't like a little Hulkaplex? It's a Gorilla Brain Wrestling podcast production found on the Shining Wizards Network.
I'm Duke Bags.
Kevin Rowe.
And together we are the co-hosts of your Duke and Rowe. If you want to hear about some terrible wrestling shows, we got you covered.
Well, we talk about good ones, too.
We're currently talking about the death of WCW.
I know what we're fucking talking about. Sometimes we get guest spots, like from the Taskmaster. I like to listen to the Year of Duke and Rogue podcast. They're funny guys. That I like when they talk about the Narch plows. I like Narch plows. That's a good move. And I like the Dungeon of Doom. You know, sometimes I call my butt the Dungeon of Doom. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Oklahoma.
Let me tell you a little bit about my favorite wrestling podcast. All right. A podcast with two men, Duke Bags, Kevin Rowe. They talk about professional wrestling. It's a man's sport. All right? And who better to talk about a man's sport than Duke Bags? Oklahoma.
And once in a while, Vince Russo stops by.
Rowe, you piece of shit! If you're not listening to the Year Duke and Rowe podcast in the back with the boys, you piece of shit, I don't know what you're doing. You got a slight one in there. If you're a man, you're talking about something only a man can do. You're talking about slight one in there. Bro, take the time to slide one in there. All right, bro, you piece of shit. Slide one in there. A Gorilla Brain Wrestling podcast production that you can find on the Shining Wizards Network.
All right, we are back. We are going to dive into this episode of Dynamite. I'm looking forward to chatting about it. We kind of talked about the momentum that is built. Only complain about it. I've been complaining about this a couple weeks in a row now. Commentary's awful. Like, I don't know what happened, but they seem uninterested in the show that they're announcing. Tony Schiavone's just not a three-desk guy. He doesn't work. He sounds like a soundboard of what a moment, and isn't that remarkable? Like, I am so dragged down a little bit. I didn't really care tonight because everything was so fire, but like, they gotta do something to freshen this up. It's bad. I don't care if they have to run a residency in Allentown, Pennsylvania to get Ian Riccaboni on the desk. I don't care if Brian Danielson has to formally announce that he'll never walk in the building again, for Nigel to announce, they got to do something. They got to do something. But other than that, I thought it was incredible. Any kind of overall things? I feel like the production shots have been so cool. We'll talk about that in a moment. But the rest of production's picked up.
Where yes. was Nigel?
Good question. He's not even on Dynamite. So.
Probably doing magic.
But if you know you're down a third guy, you call up Nigel, who would have done wonders for this.
It's true, but he's got magic shows to prepare for, man. He's probably making things disappear in the whatnot, you know?
Magic.
It's rough. It's a rough listen there, but let's dive into this, because that was kind of the only gym spot in this show. They have written Hook out of this angle. He is for realsies injured, I believe. So they had the Death Riders just attack him. Excalibur announced it before the show, sending him to the hospital. He won't be there for the trios titles. Shibata and Samoa Joe will compete for the belts regardless of the circumstances. And they do pick up a third M Powerhouse Hobbs. I kind of want to start with that because it is a title change. It wasn't my favorite thing of the night, but it is a good sign, I think, because the most persistent complaint about things is that the Death Riders angle isn't working and is going on too long. We have a really fun trios match. Samoa Joe just reminding y'all that he is still that guy, but Powerhouse Hobbs rounding out this trio I thought was a really fun substitute. And when Hook comes back, I think that'll be like a fun thing to have to reckon with. Like, I think that could be a fun feud. But Samoa Joe taps out Moxley. Interference galore, but it gave us the result we wanted. So I think it's a little more palatable this time. But Willow coming out to nullify Marina, I thought was really good. Matthew and Nicholas Jackson, like, people did not like that they came back in this angle, but they're getting the live reactions they wanted. This crowd was super hot the whole night, so it might have been a little bit more forgiving, but Swerve getting a huge pop when he came out to kind of run them off. You got a bunch of baby faces coming out after this to celebrate. The Death Riders losing, the Ops winning. I think this is such a good call for a few reasons. One, we got to get this Death Rider shit over with. Two, the Ops are such a... Even when Hook is in there, and I think Powerhouse Hobbs makes this true also, they're like one of those amalgamations of guys that don't make sense together, yet make so much sense together, and those always play well in AEW. The conglomeration worked. Best friends worked. This works in that same way, and I feel like if there's a title picture that's been struggling... Putting the titles on Samoa Joe, never a bad idea. Never a bad idea. So absolutely adore that. Thought the match was actually a lot of fun too, despite like, oh, great, interference. Like this was pretty well orchestrated, and the meat of the match I thought was really good too. I had a lot of fun watching this, and Samoa Joe tapping out Mox was like, or submitting Mox, I thought, oh, chef's kiss. Really liked a lot of this. Joe, let's start with you. What did you think of Hobbs being a replacement, having new trios, champions, and the match that got us there?
Wow, and Kate's gone. Just like that.
Screw your opinion.
Wow. Screw you guys. Home.
No, did you close your did you put your camera down?
I did. I meant to mute my mic, and I clicked my camera, but that's a new functionality in StreamYard that is boring to the audience. We don't have to talk about it. That's
No, Hobbs was a fun substitute. I didn't think about having Hobbs be in there, but his history with Hook and Taz and things like that was a nice, it plays into the story well. I was a little apprehensive about how this would go, this match, because one, looking at the time, I'm like, it felt like it was about 10 minutes to the top of the hour. So if you're going to be a really short match, we're going to have a long overrun. Plus, I thought the opening match with Mercedes was much more main event feel to me. But because we got the title change, that was a big part of why we got the main event like we did, which I think we're all happy about the switch. And I think it's kind of the first domino into transitioning out of this Death Riders thing. Was surprised that Moxley took the pin. Because can't remember the last time he's been pinned. So, I'm just hoping we're not going to transition from Death Riders into another, elite stable where they control the programming for months on months on months.
Yeah, I feel like the Bucks are going to be there more as a pivot point for Swerve and Hangman. Like, I think that's probably a tag match we're going to get. I feel like that'll probably solidify the alliance between Swerve and Hangman is where I'm guessing that's going, but totally with you on what you said there. I'm excited about the fact that the tides are starting to turn, and I'll share my additional thoughts later. But Ryan, I feel like because there's a title change, this does warrant the fun scale. Like this was an important thing. Like the trio's titles changed hands. How many funds did you have? And what did you think about Hobbs being the substitute, the title changing, and the match? A level 4 fun.
I loved this entire match. I will say I realized something tonight that I have to share with you guys, that whenever Hobbs walks out, I audibly sing Powerhouse Hobbs. Boom, boom, boom. So everyone now knows that's literally what I'm doing by myself. So
I think we all assume just based on the everything about you, but yeah.
I didn't need to know what you did by yourself. To Powerhouse Hobbs.
Powerhouse Hobbs. Boom, boom, boom. But I didn't know Hook was legit injured, which makes this make a lot more sense. And I'm kind of glad that I'm not glad he's injured, but I didn't want them to take him out of the storyline. So like, it seems like and Hobbs was a great fit. The Death Rider sold it very well. All three of them looked legitimately upset when he walked out, as to be like, what did we just do? I am sold on the Bucks right now. I really am. I think they had a good reason to come to favor the Death Riders on their return, which is basically cowardice. And I think that's a legitimate reason for anyone to favor their whatever. So I'm fine with that. And then it makes Swerve look cool, because he was just badass appearing over the barricade like that. I loved the celebration at the end, because obviously people are making it like saying, oh, they're celebrating the fact that they have these episodes. I'm sure there's some of that, but it made it the defeat of the Death Riders feel like a huge deal, that everyone, not everyone, but there at least was a crowd super happy that this thing happened. That it was like, people are going to celebrate that you won.
I think you're right that there is kind of like also this competing situation, right? Where people are so excited that the Death Riders are losing, and also that the Trios champs are going on. And there's also the characters' reactions on screen with all of this, like all the other baby faces coming down, like you were kind of alluding to here. So I am intrigued by this. I am intrigued by this.
But the thing I wondered was, it's nice to have all the baby faces come celebrate the first toppling of the Death Riders, but where the hell were they all these months when they had
where the numbers? Where the fuck stand?
They been? they got their ass whooped in the beginning, like Dark Order and some other groups, when they tried to step up to them, and then they just disappeared.
Well, they just all got gone. Their asses kicked, and they said, "I'm done. I got my ass kicked."
Celebrate with champagne? Come on, what's going on here?
Yeah, well, I don't mind.
To your point, Joe. Part of the problem is no other heels have joined the heel side. Like, I think in order to have more faces rise up against them, there should be people that are on the Death Rider side with all of this. Like, I'm glad FTR has turned heel now, and the collision was fantastic Saturday, by the way. So, I love that they turned heel now, but I kept thinking like, oh, they're going to turn heel because Dax is such an old school dickhead with stuff sometimes, right? Like, that's the perception of him. And that's kind of his character a little bit, like them joining Moxley to be like, yeah, fuck those guys and their egos, were the greatest tag team of all time, is great shit. And they never did any of that. And I feel like for the Death Riders to feel more threatening and like they're taking over the company, they have to get people on their side at any point. And that's just been missing from this whole angle. So I hear you loud and clear with that. We're going to continue to talk about this, but this does seem like the beginning of the end of the Death Riders, which has been kind of the black cloud over the product the past few months. Cause I think a lot of this product is very much, very much on track. And tonight was a nice symptom of that. So, let's move on to trying to think. There's so much to talk about. Like, where do we want to start? Where do we want to end? Let's talk about this weirdness with MJF, because this is very polarizing. Let's get it out of the way with. I actually loved it, but I understand why people didn't. We have a tag team championship match, the Hurt Syndicate versus the Gates of Agony. Gates of Agony have been picking up wins on ROH, which nobody watches, but I like that they at least attempted to justify things here. Hurt Syndicate wins. I really, really liked on commentary that MVP was putting them over a little bit, because MVP should kind of like these guys. Like, they're his type of guys of like, they're big, they're menacing, they're smooth in the ring. Like, wrestling managers should be into guys like the Gates of Agony. I also saw a lot of reaction that last time MVP was in the ring with the Learning Tree, he got thrown a couple softballs and he hit them really hard. And I think people felt like it kind of cut cut down the Learning Tree, so to speak. Like, that Big Bill and Brian Keith really didn't get to exercise because he was so on top of it. But this time on commentary, he let it breathe a little bit and put them over before he was pumping up his own dudes. But then MJF comes out and he wants the approval still. He wants the approval of everyone, but that's a different story, right? But he he's trying to win over Shelton. He keeps calling Bobby Lashley Bob, which kills me. And we get a couple of things here. One, Shelton Benjamin wants MJF's watch, which he offers to give to him, which I kind of like because MJF should be like, I have six of these at home. Like, it's not that big of a deal. But Bobby Lashley's still not feeling it. And Shelton's not fully won over. But MJF tries to seduce them with a bunch of ladies, which a lot of people didn't like, and I get it. But I think people are forgetting, like, the Hurt Syndicate, when they were the Hurt Business in WWE, constantly had, like, a gaggle of women around them at all times. Like, they were in limousines together. They were in hot tubs together. Like, this was a really big part of the Hurt Business's presentation. So I like that MJF is kind of trying to bring that aspect back to it and trying to kind of, like, seduce them. I understand that the way it was laid out and the implication is that it's a little close to, like, the Ho Train days. Like, it's a little much. And I get that it looked more like sexual services than, like, the party cell. But I didn't fully hate it. I kind of just interpreted it differently than a lot of people did. But I can understand why it made people uncomfortable. It looked a little prostitute-y from that aspect. But I was just like, oh, right, because the Hurt Business had women around them all the time. MJF's like, let's get back to those days, kind of, or whatever. But I understand why people wouldn't like it, for sure. But it was a little weird. I kind of dug it. I'm still intrigued where all of this is going. I like that Bobby Lashley is, like, the most resistant one, because he should be kind of seeing the forest through the trees a little bit, I feel like. And I like what we get later, too. We have MVP saying, I know this guy's a shithead, okay? But, like, he can help us get to where we need to go. And the second he steps out of line, you don't even want to know what I would do about that. He doesn't say what he would do about that. So I actually liked this. A lot of people did not. And I get it. I super, super, super get it. Of some sort of fun, local to this area, Notorious Mimi was one of the ladies that walked out. So it was nice to see her on television. I hope that we see her wrestling on television sooner than later. She's a great talent. But we'll go to Ryan first. Would you join MJF's Ho Train? Let's just cut to the chase.
I mean, I think if I'm on the Ho Train, it's sold like that. I mean, I don't think there's even a hesitation. Yeah,
that's fair. That's why I ask, really.
So the first one, he ran away from Bobby Lashley, was really funny. Like, I didn't say a name. That had me cackling.
Yeah, that was good.
There's something about wrestling that they both company, all wrestlers run into this problem at one point or another, which is his thing of, I'm bringing out all these beautiful women to basically buy my way in, is a heel move. It's kind of a shitty, scumbaggy move. If it's a TV show, it goes off fine, no one complains, because it's really established. Like, the villain of the TV show is doing this. The thing about it is, wrestling falls in this weird thing where for some fans, there's only a certain level of healing they'll allow. And then it's like you cross this line where it's like, I don't want this. Now, I think we've talked about it before. I'm not 100% sure. I think some of it has to do with the fact that people's real life is tied into wrestling at points. So, like, we view these characters.
The character never ends. Yeah. It's a very odd thing.
And you have heels switching to babyface, switching back to heels all the time. So, like, there's certain lines to be like, if this guy's good, how do I ever forgive this, when he switches? And wrestling at the end of the day is not meant for the most sophisticated of storytelling. There's a limit to what you could. That being said, I'm not judging anyone who hated it. I'm not judging anyone who liked it. I understood the move, so I was okay with it. Where it's just like, this is a heel move. And then what my felt with the end was, these women were like, oh, we just like these Hurt Syndicate guys, so we're just going to leave with them. Became much more like a thing. The bigger question I have is, why was the Hurt Syndicate wearing hats in their match graphic?
That's an excellent question. I think part of where this missed for some people was also the way it was executed. I think if MJF just comes out with all of them, this is barely even a conversation. I think the presentation of trotting them down was different, but I think if MJF just comes out with two women on both arms and then four women walking beside him, I don't think this is even like a thing. I think it was very weird. Like, they are all dressed alike. And well, so I think that's part of what the disconnect plus, for some people is with this. Yeah.
You had the letdown of people were expecting to see Cedric. For yeah, no reason, but it was just
that part was intentional. I think that was heelish too.
Yeah. I do, but like that's a weird like you've now annoyed people even a little bit further because now they're like, I wanted this awesome thing, it didn't happen, and now I wasn't okay with the storyline to begin with, so I'm going to dislike it even more.
Agreed. I think most people also are intrigued by the storyline. They just didn't like this segment. Like, I think a lot of people like this idea that MJF is trying to win. There's some people that are just like, why is MJF trying to get into a stable of black wrestlers? Like, I get that aspect of it too. But I think there's a lot of people that are seeing this thing of like, MJF always, he always wants people's approval, but he can never admit that. And I think there's a lot of people that like the end game is a little murky, but not in a bad, confusing way. The end game is murky in a like, who's going to be the cat and who's going to be the mouse game. Like, I think who's going to get the best of who with this, which I find really interesting. Joe, what did you think of this segment? And what do you think of this whole arc with MJF?
The segment, I feel both ways. So I felt a little uncomfortable initially when it felt a little bit like trafficking.
Yeah, that's a really good point. The other company is under a sex trafficking investigation, so that's a little gross.
So I felt a little dirty with that. I understand that last week MVP told MJF to like think about what they want, and you know he and MJF goes to the lowest common denominator. He thinks they want, you know, beautiful, sexy women. They want, like, you know, like low-hanging fruit of things that guys would want. And
yes.
So he goes that route, and sex sells, and he thinks he can win their hearts that way. And he kind of gets Shelton on his side with, you know, the women and with the watch and everything else. He still can't figure out what Bob wants, which I think would be fun if he figures it out, and maybe and he brings like, hey, I got Tony to sign Cedric. I have him and brought Cedric in. Are you happy now? Like, and then that would be an interesting thing, I think, to bring him in that way. So yeah, I'm curious to see how this all plays out with the arc. The match itself between Gates and Agni was fun. Considering I haven't seen them on AEW television in a long time.
Yes, agreed.
So yeah, like I wouldn't question what they did to deserve a title shot, but to your point, MVP propping them up and putting them over on commentary really helped remind people of, you know, they are a good tag team when you watch them. So
they're a very good tag team. And one thing I do like is we're getting a lot of defenses out of the Hurt Syndicate. Like that's been refreshing. Like it feels like the tag titles are important again. Still waiting for that like overarching story for these, but it is nice to see them like defended by a badass team on television again. Like it feels so bare minimum, but for a long time it was very off track. Very off track. Guys, we're moving right along. Thank you to everybody in the chat for hanging out with us tonight. We've got some straight fire to talk about. Straight fire. Let's talk about Josh Alexander. We'll get the title change and the talent reveal kind of knocked out before we talk about the incredible in-ring that we saw from the other two remaining matches here. But we find out that Josh Alexander is the opponent for Hangman Adam Page. This is a great signing for AEW. And what makes me really happy is I think it's a great signing for Josh Alexander because he's been so vocal about wanting to work a G1. Like so vocal about it that it makes me happy because I think that's a real possibility with how deep the relationship is with AEW and New Japan, despite The Rock wearing a Lion Mark shirt. Like I don't think WWE is starting a relationship with them anytime soon, but I don't know how I feel about two major debuts being tournament losses for the people that enter them. Like, that's not the best, but Hangman obviously had to win it. And I liked the story here because Hangman kind of won by the skin of his teeth, right? Like, I thought they had fun in ring chemistry. I want to see them run this back with more time. I think it could be very, very fun. But we find out that Kyle Fletcher, who's Paige's next tournament opponent, he comes out and he starts brawling with them. And Josh Alexander is attacked by Paige from behind and dropped with the power bomb. So it feels kind of like we have Josh Alexander aligning with the Callis family, which I still think it should be Duke Hudson and the lines with them. But Josh Alexander, like, having a mouthpiece is not the worst idea. And him in this particular stable is, that's a scary fucking stable, man. When you look at that group of guys, like Takeshita, Kyle Fletcher, Josh Alexander, Mark Davis, when he comes back, like that's nasty. Those are some nasty workers in there. So Ryan, how do you feel about Josh Alexander showing up, the match that we got, and the alignment with the Callis family?
I liked seeing Alexander show up. I think he's got a lot of fun matches in his future in AEW, so that's a really cool thing. I'm kind of glad they explained the headgear. And I know that sounds stupid, but I think it's such a, like, a part of him that to be like, he's one of the few pro wrestlers that wears amateur headgear that you're like, why? Like, are you trying to be something? Like, it's part of the whole story. And I think it's especially relevant because he comes out wearing the amateur style singlet. So you're kind of getting a grip on this guy that he might be, for lack of a better term, Kurt Angle.
Yeah.
And he is, but you also want to express that some of this is practical and look at the pain he's gone through and stuff like that. Like, the match was incredible. I mean, both these wrestlers are so good. And again, Alexander's going to fit in so well here because he's got size. So as good as he is, he's a big boy. So he can really have some fun. I don't mind that he lost because he lost Hangman.
Yes.
So you lost to a main event level guy. It's not like you came in and lost to Serpentico. Like, you lost to, like...
Wow, Shayna Serpentico. What are you, a nihilist, Dan?
No, I actually love Serpentico, but it was just one of the...
I know you do.
I went into my dark heart.
Well, and I liked the way the match unfolded because Hangman kind of got away with one, right? Like, oh, I think that's a big piece of it, yeah.
And the whole match was they stole... The trajectory of the Callis family is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. They started somewhere.
Was in it for like a week, remember? Like, it's not. Yeah,
they started hot, cooled off real quick.
Yeah.
And now they're fucking awesome again.
Yeah. And I actually really like Don Callis as a manager. There are some people now there are some people whose reactions are getting worked, which is very funny. It's like the same people that hate the Young Bucks that don't realize, like, they're just leaning into everything that people say about mm-hmm. them. And then there are people who just found the Callis family to be irredeemable. But I actually really like Don Callis, both on commentary and as a manager, when he has people that are this sellable. Like, you kind of can't fuck it up with these guys. And the roots of it running so deep now, I think are actually pretty interesting. But Joe, what did you think of Josh Alexander showing up in AEW as the wild card, losing to Hangman, but maybe the friends he made along the way were the real story about all of this?
Love Josh Alexander in AEW. I think it's a good fit for both him and the company. Like you said, the G1's there for him if he's able to do that. Plus, I just feel like his style works better here in AEW. But speaking of style, I thought the match style felt more like a Hangman match. And I thought Alexander would try to, like, tech him more, like, be more of a technical wrestler. So it definitely felt more a Hangman match. And I guess the one thing I really didn't care, I mean, I liked the fact that he lost on a quick roll-up, you know, like a kind of a way to keep a new debuting guy safe and protected, but I just didn't like the fact that we got back-to-back quick roll-ups. That's
fair. That's very fair.
To try to protect some people. But otherwise, yeah, I think him being in the family is a nice place for him to start out at. especially to help fill those gaps with the other injuries in the Callis family. So yeah, I think he'd be a Stone Cold assassin looking motherfucker in it. So
I think so too. And I think he's actually a better promo than people give him credit for, but having a mouthpiece for a guy like that is going to be valuable. So I'm with you there. That is, he is a Stone Cold motherfucker. It's good shit. Let's keep rocking and rolling. Only two more matches to talk about here, but thank you to Big G in the chat. Thank you for 2LT Photo hanging out. Thank you to Jamie Apps from Pario Magazine, who is a part of the Hive now, which is very cool. Jamie's great. He's one of our friends in Australia.
Jamie joined the Hive?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so excited. That.
Yeah. He's one of the most consistent and most just wonderful people and content creators out there. Really, really good guy. Really, really good guy. So hell, follow Jamie Epps and Pario Magazine. It expands beyond wrestling stuff too. It expands into a lot of entertainment. But man, if you at all are into independent wrestling or anything from other scenes, Jessica Troy versus Chevs, man. Whoo, that PWA Australia match. Good shit. Good shit. But let's get back to AEW here. Let's talk about, man, it's so tough. Well, let's quick talk about this. Let's talk about FTR and their actions against Cope and the explanation in this video package and Tony Schiavone announcing that they've been suspended for a week. If you didn't see this on Collision, it's great. It's really, really great. They've done a good job building this out. The heel turn, Ryan and I were there for, it was done very well. Like, the heat was really sustainable. It was very loud. We all knew it was coming, but it still worked, I think, because of the concerto on the neck. And then Cash was just doing all this dickish stuff. Like, he put on the neck brace and then was laid out on the stretcher like instead of Cope. I thought it was really, really good stuff, but... if either of you want to chime in on that video package, or if you guys got to see Collision and want to speak to it, I thought it was excellent what they've done with this heel turn so far.
Go run.
Collision was awesome, and they're nailing it. And there's a way to do sustained violence like they're pulling off that really works. Sometimes it feels cheesy, and it didn't feel cheesy on Collision. It felt good. This was better than I hoped for with the heel turn, to be quite honest. I kind of thought they might try to put them back into like what they once were, and they haven't really gone that route, at least yet. And I really appreciate that, which is they're more violent than I expected.
Yeah. They're more vicious than maybe previous iterations of them have been, for sure. But anything else, Joe? Any thoughts?
No, it's nothing really that you haven't said already. I really like how they're doing this with the underappreciated tone for being the greatest tag team in the world that people aren't recognizing fully.
Yes. I think the only thing I got, like, I don't know where the Hurt Syndicate fall on the face heel spectrum.
Face.
I know I want to see that match. Like, they seem like they're booked as heels, but people are they're insanely over. So they're kind of tweenerish, I guess. Kind of tweenerish, but face. It's working, and I want to see the match, so I don't give a shit. But let's move on here. Let's talk about our opener. Let's end with Ospreay and Takeshita, because we've got this match between Mercedes Moné and Athena, which I feel like the expectations were very high. Now, this was, from what I heard, and I believe what Fightful Select reported, initially supposed to main event. And it was interesting because I thought there was a possibility this got switched for a couple of reasons. One, they gave these women a lot of time. They gave them a lot of time. And I know there was a planned overrun, but you won't cut time for the first match of the show. That's just not happening, especially the first segment of the show. So I thought that was part of it. The other thought might have been, man, everybody at WWE is really shooting off at the hip, right? Let's show our women featured in a prominent spot. Like, this is how you respond to criticism in a show, I feel like. Two former WWE talent, one who chose to come to AEW, one who was cut and obviously woefully underutilized as Ember Moon, right? Coming back. In a match that they didn't get to do there, that they wanted to do. Both of them spoke about that. WWE is not having a women's main event at WrestleMania for like the second or third year in a row. And the stories have been very poorly built on the WWE side. Maybe they said, if WWE is talking about us as much, maybe we should take some familiar faces that they used to have and let them show the fuck out in Mercedes' hometown and give them a ton of time. LaRon, who's in the chat. Hi, LaRon. Say that's the longest women's TV match in AEW history. I kind of assumed it was. I didn't know, just because like the lights out match was had some decent time and stuff like that. But that makes me happy to hear, because these two deserve it. And let them show the fuck out. Now, the other thing is AEW has had a string. I don't know if it's been consecutive, but they've been doing a lot of women's main events lately. A lot. And I love to see that. So it doesn't feel like, oh, this should have main evented when the main event did have a title change, right? So I really, really appreciate that they put this on where they did, because I feel like this was a little bit of like a fuck them. I also thought this match was just really, really brilliantly done. Like, these two women knocked it out of the park. A lot of people got to see what Athena's been doing in ROH. Mercedes sells like she's dead, and it's great. Like, because Athena's really, really hard hitting. The dual swinging DDTs. There was this one really great production shot of the Owen Hart cup, like in the corner of the frame, and then like zoomed in kind of slowly on the wrestling. The spots to the outside were great. The power bombs, like, this was both of them doing what they do best in the ring together and knowing exactly how to play off of each other. Like, that is magic. Like, when pro wrestling is like, I know who I am so much as a wrestler, and I know who you are so much as a wrestler, and the other person is speaking the same language in that way. I thought this was excellent. This is probably a women's match of the year candidate. Now, Mercedes wins. I'm firmly of the belief that they are playing into everybody that's calling her like female Hogan bullshit or whatever. Like, I have not heard a bad word about her at backstage. I have not, she does not have overwhelming creative control beyond like things to do with her character, to my knowledge. Everybody wants to wrestle her because she's great. And I think from what I've heard, mostly pretty easy to work with, in the way that pretty much every wrestler is mostly easy to work with. That I have not heard any bullshit about her, but people, because she's undefeated in AEW, like to say this. So I think they're leaning really hard into it, and I think that's a fabulous idea. Let her apex as a heel and see where that goes. Now, on the other side of the bracket, you have either Chris Statlander and Mercedes 3. Those first two matches were both fucking great. Or Mercedes and Jamie Hayter, which, sign me up for that any day of the week. Joe, let's start with you. Were you as in love with this match as I was, at least the parts that I saw, because I was getting chicken tenders? Or and who do you want to see her face in the finals?
I did. This was by far my favorite match in the car on the show tonight. I initially thought it was gonna be main event, but you know, to your point, sacrificing main event for, you know, about a 21-minute match or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I'll take that for the opening match over a main event. Yeah, it was incredible to see them show just like how good they are as far as wrestlers, regardless of promotion. And I felt like this match almost felt like a larger moment than a semifinal match in a tournament. Like, I felt like it should have been, you know, title versus title type of match on pay-per-view, especially for like the first matchup between the two of them. But loved a lot of the reversals, a lot of the strike exchanges. Like you said, they worked a lot. You know, a lot of people have fun with the elevated ramp. There's a lot of action out there this tonight, and they used a lot of it tonight. Other than, you know, the quick roll up was fine. It kind of helped protect Athena a little bit in the loss, since she's the forever ROH champion. And I'm looking forward to seeing, maybe, I think Mercedes and let's show Jamie Hayter. Okay. I think Jamie could use that, get back up in that spotlight of a big time match, even though I think it's going to be Mercedes and Tony at All In. So,
okay. I'm not mad about that either. I agree with everything you said too. I think this isn't the only time they're doing this dance. I'll put it that way. Like I agree that I would have loved for this kind of doing a dream match to open an episode of Dynamite feels weird, but I think these two are destined to meet down the line. This was super fun. Probably the biggest match of Athena's career too, which is just a cool and special thing. So absolutely love that. The chat is saying Mercedes versus Stat 3 a little bit. I kind of want to see Jamie because I'm looking for fresh matchups. I like when tournaments give us those, but man, both the first and the second one with Stat were so fucking good. I'm not complaining. This Owen has been stacked, but let's throw it over to Ryan, who hates women. So I think he probably didn't have probably zero funds. This was probably this garbage is not for me rating.
No, see, if I really wanted to confuse people, I'd come out with like a this.
Just like a two. It was fine.
It was fine. No, I mean, this was without question
a four.
This was awesome. God bless the crowd for chanting "Holy shit!" before they even started.
Yeah, because this gave me like Kenny and Danielson vibes a little bit.
Yes, yes. In some ways, and I don't love how it happened because I want Athena on AEW TV more regularly. But in some ways, her being ROH only and the undefeated ROH champ put an air of, like, I'm blanking on majesty. Or like, there's just something that made it special. It added to it. Because she hadn't been in AEW taking losses or anything like that. So she felt like, it almost felt like someone coming from another company was stepping in, when in reality, same guy signs their paychecks, but she's just wrestling somewhere else.
And also a dominant champion, to your point. Like,
yeah,
there are no other places you could get this matchup with the dominance, because Athena's been champ for 850 days or something like that. So I agree. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
And then there's the, what was it? The Four Amigos. And then Athena tried to match her with power bombs, which is really cool. But then, of course, where she gets. But I just like that there was like a tit for tat thing in the match of like. And I also love that this. Yes, it had a definitive ending in the sense that Mercedes won, but not a definitive ending in that you thought that she dominated Athena. This felt like a match where if they were to wrestle 10 times, it might split 5-5, and yeah. I love that. Because it does make me want to see it happen again. I also, anyone complaining that they're pushing Mercedes towards the big, you know, the women's championship. They signed the biggest women's free agent in history.
Yeah.
And they're making her appear extremely dominant. I don't know how that's a bad thing for at least a short. I mean, her run is TBS is a year, but all the belts, I'm assuming it'd be a short time. It's not a bad thing to do. It kind of like, the Kenny Omega her. She's the belt collector.
She is. I think part of why people, I get this side of it. I don't think the only part of it that doesn't feel in bad faith to me is it's a tournament match. So she could lose it because her title's not on the line. And the other side of that is people just really want Athena to be on the main roster in wrestling and succeeding. So I think they were like, Athena's finally here. And then she's going to lose. Like, that's kind of a bummer. But this match was so good, and I think it services the story for Mercedes to go on to the finals, and I think Athena losing here and having something to try and get a win back over Mercedes in the future are both productive developments to come out of this match. So let's close it off with this. I mean, I don't even what do we even say about Takeshita and Will Ospreay? This was a Will Ospreay win in one of the best TV matches you'll ever see. Like, I can't put into words how inevitable Will Ospreay is, and then also how inevitable Takeshita is. Like, they are both so obviously future world champions, Will Ospreay first. But this was like, I was so glad it was on this episode, because this match felt so much like an embodiment of what AEW does perfectly. Like, a lot of in-ring storytelling here, two really bright talents who have a lot to gain from winning and a lot to gain from losing, and stakes involved. And the crowd was fucking, they were nuts all night. Boston was sold out, but holy shit, were they, this had a bunch of false finishes, which is a Kate style match. I love matches with a bunch of false finishes. That is something that I geek out for when they're done well. But these two just told an incredible in-ring story. This is one that I'm glad that there's a catalog building now on an app, because I want to go watch this again. Here's the thing that I'll add to it, because this match was obviously fucking nuts, and there's only good things to say about it, and it certainly feels like the finals that we're getting is going to be something special, regardless of who ends up there, if it's Fletcher or Hangman, right? Because I think it's going to be great. Let's say Will Ospreay wins the Owen. Let's say he wins it at Double or Nothing in the finals. Him versus Mox, I feel like, would be made so much more interesting. This is going to surprise nobody that I want this, but I think it's a pretty creative idea. Eddie Kingston counsels Will Ospreay on how to beat Jon Moxley. Nobody knows Jon Moxley better than Eddie Kingston. Will Ospreay has way too like acrobatic of a style to beat such a violent guy like Jon Moxley. And Eddie Kingston does that all for a title. Will Ospreay says, if I win, when I win, you get a title shot when you're healed up and you can come back and face me. It gives something for Moxley to fight Eddie about when Eddie is back. And I just think that element of it, of Eddie Kingston being like, I have seen what's been happening since I've been out, and it's a fucking disaster that Jon Moxley is on this power trip. And nobody can beat him, but you're the guy who can. And I'm going to help you get there for the betterment of AEW, because I know it's a joke how much I like love Eddie Kingston, but the crowds react like he's a day one guy as much as anybody else. Like, I'm not the only guy that's like, he's my fucking dude. Like, that crowd loves Eddie Kingston. It is going to be dying for him to be there. I think it's a payoff to not having him on screen this whole time. I think it could be really, really special. And Eddie Kingston and Will Ospreay are such different types of wrestlers that I think the tension there would be sick. Like, I think there's something really fun to that. And it also lets Eddie Kingston walk back into the company when he is healthy to get a title shot right away without having to people be like, well, why didn't he win? Well, the relationships dictated that, right? So I think that could be something really, really cool and special. This match was one of the best matches I've ever seen on AEW Dynamite. This was beyond a pay-per-view quality match. I feel like I say this about pretty much every Will Ospreay match. He's just crazy. And I also say it about Takeshita, obviously, because he's also ridiculous. But the power and the agility of both of these guys is so much fun. Joe, what do you think of this match? And what do you think of my fantasy booking?
You know, I don't usually try to get too much into your fantasies, but
sweet fantasy booking.
Wow.
I pulled a Ryan.
You did. Don't go full Ryan.
Never.
Never. I didn't think about the whole Eddie Kingston as a shaman to Will Ospreay. That'd be
I'm a shaman, partner.
You can walk around wearing a cloak and kind of, yeah.
Love it.
That'd be interesting for him to be his version of Yoda to Will's Luke. So yeah, it's interesting. I'd be there for it. The match itself, I thought, was for people who don't like AEW, they probably really hate this match because of all the false finishes and, you know, sometimes the not selling, you know, some things, you know, like how many hidden blades can you take? How many of these can you take? Can you pop back up? But for me, I think it adds to the energy of the match, the pacing of the match. I think Ospreay and Takeshka, wherever they wrestle, they seem to, that third stanza of every match they have, it seems to like go to a whole different gear. And that's what really gets me going and excited about the match they have. So, yeah, I loved it. I thought my one critique was I thought maybe they had one segment of false finishes too many. Like,
that's fair.
They had a couple. I'm like, okay, that's fine. And then they went matching again later on. But other than that, yeah, it was. I don't know how he doesn't win Match of the Year or Wrestler of the Year again, because to your point, I think in past weeks he wrestled so damn much.
It's crazy. It's I mean, even the Kevin Knight match at the pay-per-view, like his ability to get the crowd on his side the way he does just through wrestling and seeming like a guy. Ryan and I were talking about this last week a little bit, but you weren't here because you had friends outside of this. But we were talking about one thing that I think people buy into is Will Ospreay is it just seems like he loves wrestling. Like that guy just loves to wrestle. It feels like in this like little kid way, that's really endearing. And then he's just the best wrestler in the world. Like you don't have to build out a huge character beyond that when you're that fucking good. Like that's enough. That's enough. So.
And also I prepaid for my friends. So I had to hang out with them. Otherwise I'm out money.
As long as you admit that you pay for your friends.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan, you're a loser like me and you have no friends. You were here last week to talk about this with Will Ospreay, but what did you think of this match? And how much do you love my fantasy booking on a scale of 10 to 10? Because it's great.
Thank you for the ricochet shot at me, you know. The match was incredible. I mean, you're talking two of the best wrestlers in the world right now. Takeshita is just awesome. I could have seen this going either way. I know Ospreay's got the momentum, so I expected him to win. But if you told me that Takeshita ended up winning, I would have been like, okay, they're just deciding to heat him up now. Like, it was one of those things where both guys legitimately could have done it. Your fantasy booking sucks.
My fantasy booking rules, and Maria in the chat says so. So I like her.
No, I mean, I don't care how anyone feels about it. I don't even know how I feel about it. I'm just going to have to take the stance of now it sucks. Now, see, what I think should happen, if you want my honest to God opinion, we're gonna go with your fantasy booking here. Is not that is it? We don't know how healthy Eddie is, right? We don't know how far away he is from returning.
I know he's not. He's going to have to likely do the full year that he's been out. He's not doing like the Ilya Dragunov thing of like I could be back 4 months sooner than my timeline or whatever. Like
when is his full year?
Both legs. He's 43. It's a rough recovery. It was a bad injury. So I think late summer is what I heard, okay. Which Will Ospreay's going to be champion for if he is the one to dethrone Moxley. Like you're going into Forbidden Door then. He's obviously going to come out of that champion, I think. Like.
Well, no. What if they hold Mox? When does you're right. Damn. Well, if he's only like 2 months.
Everything's different this year because Europe and America are swapped and All In is in July and not August. So everything's a little thrown off.
If he is back, like say 2 or 3 months early, my fantasy booking is that Ospreay's wrestling Mox. It looks like, you know, the Death Riders are interfering, and that's when Eddie Kingston returns and just lays waste to the Death Riders. And Mox is so shaken up that Eddie Kingston is back. They're like, that just throws him off his game, and Ospreay takes the win.
I don't want a, like, distraction situation, but...
It's not a distraction like, in the sense of, like, oh, my music played and someone's distracted. It's a distraction.
It's got in his head.
Well, he's actually going to walk out and fight the Death Riders and beat their asses. And Mox is just going to be like, I didn't see this coming. And it's going to.
Will he have a can of gasoline?
That's a good question.
Pure flamethrower.
Flamethrower. Okay, now we're talking.
Darby already did that, though. That's Darby's thing.
Yeah, he is kind of the... He kind of hallmarks having a flamethrower. That's fair.
Yeah, I don't care. Fine, blowtorch. Fine, we'll just go with a blowtorch.
Fine, blowtorch fine, then.
Fine.
Well, I think by booking rules. So there's that. But that was our Dynamite tonight. It was very in-ring heavy. It was very, very, very good. This was a lot of fun and a fun way to mark the milestone. This felt like what AEW does best at the forefront. So good stuff there. And that's it, buddies. Join us next week. But before we get out of here, Joe, where can the people find you?
Oh, sure. You can find me on some form of social media at _AsianJoe. And I do have a serial review blog still. I just haven't done any serial lately. I have a few I think I need to do. So hopefully in the coming weeks. In the meantime, you can read Ryan's blog and he's just posting new stuff finally, Ryan.
Well, I'm taking shots at me when you're saying finally. I heard it. You can find me on all our socials at Mark Order Pod. You can follow my history blog here for history.com. I did just post a new story on the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act, which for some reason might be relevant to some people because there's a little to do about tariffs recently. I will have next week my follow-up to that about why it's relevant today, which most people already understand, and my review on the sources I use, which I'm going to try to be a little more in-depth with. And then next month, I have my article already written for what's coming out. So I have given myself a little bit of a lead so that I can actually be consistent.
I am now going to definitely do like a media strategy thing on my own YouTube channel. I was getting some things aligned at the old Fight Club, so that's settled in a little bit easier than it's been. Once we get on the other side of WrestleMania, I'll be back at my own channel. So go subscribe there at Miss Kate Fabe on YouTube. We'll get back to doing some fun stuff. I like to do more industry-based stuff there. You guys hear me talk about wrestling reaction-wise every night of the week. So we do some other things over there. Also, I think there's a new season of BattleBots out that really snuck up on me. So we'll be doing some watch-alongs for that because I love BattleBots. So go follow me there. You can check out my content there. But all weekend for WrestleMania, your SmackDown post show, your Fightful Select your Fightful main channel stand and deliver post show, WrestleMania Nights 1 and 2 behind the paywall, and Raw After Mania behind the paywall with Alex Pulowski for all of those except for Fridays where I have Cardoza, my younger, sexier Alex, who joins me for that. So I will be on coverage all weekend long covering WrestleMania. Should be a good time, but Jesse was like saying, fuck yeah, BattleBots. That's really where my heart is. I want to be a BattleBots influencer. But we are going to get out of here. This is the part of the show where we throw it to Ryan, who narrates the outro.
So put on the outro overlay. I have to make sure the volume's up, and then I hit outro.
The Mark Order Podcast. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming. Join the Mark Order Podcast.